Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the number. So today is Tuesday, 23rd of June, 2020. We will continue from where we stopped. We are at page 113, part 2 of lesson 21 of the Heart Sutta. Before we start, we will have half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So, as usual, you just have to develop the ability to relax, maintain awareness, then allow the mundane mind to settle down or slow down on its own. You have cultivated your spiritual faculties, your daily mindfulness, your daily religious routine, then your mind will settle down very fast because you are already in the meditative state. The moment a cultivator has the five spiritual faculty, they are always in the meditative state. Their spiritual faculties are mental mind states or faculties that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. And they are the composed mind when there is faith. And when there is virya, it's not sleepy, it's full of tenacity to cultivate, to develop this understanding. Then when you have sati, you are just aware without thought. The mind is just aware. So without thought, there is no duality, no like, no dislike, no sensual desire, no ill will. You are peaceful. Then the stability of it is samadhi. So samadhi is when your sati is very stable, it becomes collected and unwavering. So at the moment of sense experience, even in the midst of life, when you live your life, you are heedful, you are aware, you are not heedless, you are not lost in thought. There is order during life, during existence. So these are the beautiful spiritual faculties that can help you to develop the meditation and the understanding of the spiritual teaching. Then when sati and samadhi is already developed, you can see things as they are to arise the wisdom. You can insight into phenomena to realize the three universal characteristics. That's the reason why the five spiritual faculties are very powerful. They are meditative state that can allow you to understand meditation, develop the meditation, and awakening. So spiritual faculties are the most important. You need to stabilize them, work on them during the daily life. So now for meditation, you have that, you just relax, maintain awareness, you are in the meditative state straight away. You need to maybe allow some time for the heedless thinking to slow down and finally cease. Then you maintain the four support. Relax. Relax means body and mind completely relaxed, at ease. No more tension, no more stress, no more worry and all those things. Completely at ease. Then just let things be. Whatever will be, will be. Don't try to know, don't do anything. Don't even try to arise the thinking. When you don't try to know, you will not think. You just let things be, maintain awareness. Whatever that your mind can be aware of, just allow it to be. Do not create more thought, no more proliferation after that. Initially, it's most of the time tactile at the sense spaces. Even the hearing, smell, taste, everything also is a form of tactile. Bodily tactile is all your sensation, your vibration or whatever. Your feeling of hot and cold, warm, peaceful or whatever. All these are manifested within your mind states. So you can actually become aware of them, but you don't get yourself like disturbed by them or carried away by them. Or the other correct word is you don't allow yourself to be deceived by them. They will have no power over you because creating condition arising, not real, not what you think. So with this understanding, you just allow your mind to be aware, then it will slow down. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. It will settle down and become very quiet, very peaceful. You must go through all these stages. That's why you need to have patience. Then one day when you are able to realize that silent mind, that true mind, the mind that is in tranquility and stillness, the meditative mind, the awareness nature, you will have a lot of joy and you experience peace, piti, sukhang, everything, the associated beautiful mind state born of a mind with spiritual focus. So relax, maintain awareness. Okay, so we will start the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have, especially the spiritual faculties of sati, which is the silent mind, the awareness within. And use this mind state to continue with your cultivation. Everything you do, mindful, aware, so that you can stabilize your daily mindfulness. Have a good religious routine, daily religious routine, to enable you to have the Dhamma cultivation throughout the day. The moment you wake up, meditate, pay respect to Pajam, then do your puja. If you want to wash up, answer nature's call, then only do, it's up to you, you can. Then after that, come out of it, share merit, transfer merit, then do your whatever duty or daily routine that you need to work. How you gather yourself, prepare yourself for breakfast, everything mindful, even answering nature's call. Until you are ready to leave your house for work. Then before you leave your house, pay respect, triple jam. Then maintain mindfulness throughout. Even when you are driving or going on public transport, whatever you do, maintain awareness, mindfulness. Then continue until your office, within your career environment. Then learn to be mindful and aware while you talk to people, communicate with people, while you are doing your work and activity. All this you have to train, learn. Initially, it's not easy, but if you are determined, if you have the faith, then you have the determination to be mindful. It will come. Then, of course, you can also make aspiration, invoke power, merits, for causes and conditions for you to develop this daily mindfulness. Then when you come back, same. Then before you sleep again, you can meditate. You choose to sleep early, then middle of the night wake up, also can. That's what I did during the early days. And bowing is very good. Walking is very good. Sitting is also, lying down is also very good. So throughout the day, you are in this four posture. So maintain mindfulness of the four posture, then extend it to all the activity in between. We call that sati sampajana, daily mindfulness with clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. Not until your daily mindfulness stabilizes, the real meditation cannot start. So this part, bear in mind. We are at part 2.1. The title is Form is Emptiness and Emptiness is Form, page 113 of our Heart Sutta, second edition. We are at lesson 21. Form is emptiness and emptiness is form. This concept of form is emptiness and emptiness is form is very difficult to grasp, and most people cannot understand this particular sentence. There are also some Buddhists of the Theravada tradition who thinks that the Mahayana teaching is not authentic because they cannot understand or accept what is stated in the Heart Sutta, means the teaching that explains why form is emptiness and emptiness is form. Because to them, they thought it's really illogical. How can form be emptiness? And how can emptiness become form? So they couldn't comprehend. And because of that, they thought Mahayana not authentic. They say Theravada don't have such teaching. But if you understand the real Theravada teaching, you will understand there is also the word sunyata, which is emptiness in Pali, as stated in the Theravada tradition's teaching. So sunyata is emptiness, is related to anatta. Actually, when you penetrate anatta, you penetrate sunyata. Empty nature of existence, emptiness. Not what you think, not so real. The whole phenomenal world of consciousness is not what you think, no reality. Empty nature of existence, that meaning is very profound. And anatta also includes a very profound understanding of everything within the phenomenal world, within the conditioned world, all phenomenal, every arising. They have these universal characteristics of impermanence, leading to suffering when you attach and cling and want things your way. And because they are impermanent, because they are dependent, originating, condition, arising, cause of phenomena. So the Buddha said, none of these phenomena is a permanent, unchanging entity that remains forever unchanging. There is no such thing within the conditioned world. That's why he said, you cannot deludedly grasp and cling and hold on to things and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine, like your form and mine. You think it's real, you think it belongs to you. No, because this one goes the way of nature. It's dependent, originating, condition, arising, cause of it. It's a phenomenon. When the condition that sustains it exists, it appears to be alive, to exist, like real. But it goes through the process of aging, getting old, getting sick and die. And there is birth. Wherever there is birth, there is death. So all this they can't see, they can't understand. And when you understand, then you realize you cannot hold, you cannot grasp, you cannot cling, you cannot like believe that this one belongs to you. No such thing. But it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. It goes the way of nature. All phenomena exhibit that universal characteristic. So anatta nature means not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, cling onto and say, this is me. This is I. The first aspect is sakayaditi. It is non-self. It is not no self. It is also not a self. But non-self. Means in between. No self is like nothingness, nothing. But we know the form and mind is something, it's not nothing. Self means permanent unchanging entity, but it is also not self. It's also not no self, but it is non-self. Means it is a form and mind, the five aggregate, having that characteristic, but it is not self or no self. It is non-self, means not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call this is me, this is I, but it's related to you, to your karmic nature, and that one is subject to karma. That's what anatta means, non-self. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, it exists, but it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call me and the I. If you do that, it becomes self-delusion. And because it's non-self, within the conditioned world, there is a law. They call nature's law karma. That form of mind is subject to karma. So you have to understand that. That's why you have right duty with regards to the law of karma. That's why all the enlightened beings, they have four qualities. We chant under the salutation to the Sangha. Supatipanno bhagavato sāvaka sangha. So, of good conduct is the order of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Then the second virtue is of upright conduct. Is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. The third one is jñāṇapatipanno, of wise conduct. Is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. The last one, Samici Patipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho. That one is, you must have that quality of right duty. It's the order of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So you must have that wisdom that gives rise to the understanding of all these four. Of good conduct, upright conduct, wise conduct, and dutiful conduct. So dutiful conduct refers to the understanding of anatta, non-self. But it's nothing, not nothingness, not no self. It's also not self, but in between, non-self. Means not what you think, not you. Not a permanent and changing entity, but there is such thing as a form and mind that goes away of nature, subject to the law of karma. That's the reason why the Buddha Dharma is not easy to comprehend, and it's not easy for living beings to live life and understand life because of this rather complex understanding of anatta. Anatta is a very unique teaching of the Buddha. Only the teaching of the Buddha has this understanding of what the form of mind is. The anatta nature of all things, of all phenomena. So what I am trying to explain to you is when you understand anatta, you will understand non-self. You will also understand empty nature of existence because they come from the universal characteristics of impermanent. Things that are impermanent, they continuously evolve and flow. They come and they go. That's why ultimately they transform. From the void, they arise. To the void, they return. So everything is not what you think. Whether you exist or you don't exist, the universe continues. That's the reason why in the Mahayana teaching, they have this law of interdependence, means the oneness nature. When you start to understand the original nature is the oneness nature. That's why we always say all is one. One is all. The meaning is very deep. All is one means the whole universe, the whole existence. They are no different from your one former mind. Because without you as a former mind that evolved over this long period of time, the universe will not be what it is today, at this moment. And if it's not because of the condition of all the beings in this universe evolving as it is over this period of long period of existence and time, your form and mind will not be, your form and mind, each and every one of our form and mind will not be what it is that we are experiencing now. So it's interdependent. The whole of existence is one, actually. That's why we call it the oneness nature. So all is one, one is all. And that is the reason why the Heart Sutta can penetrate and understand that form is indeed emptiness. Emptiness is form. When you have the wisdom and the understanding and the penetrative awakening, you will understand. And there is no mistake. The Sutta is correct, authentic, and profound. There is also a Sutta in the Theravada tradition, Ani Sutta. You go and Google, A-N-I, Ani Sutta. The Buddha said, under this Sutta, he said, when people do not understand the teaching that is very deep in its meaning related to emptiness, that is the beginning of the downfall of the Dhamma ending age. Means they attach to a different form of teaching. They are more materialistic and deviate from the true essence. The real teaching that can awaken and bring forth the wisdom is emptiness, anatta. Anatta meaning very deep. Non-self is only one aspect. The other aspect is because it's impermanent, it is empty. Empty means no reality. Empty nature of existence. Yeah. Like what I used to explain. We cannot deny we were born according to your birthday, yeah? Unless you have the wrong birthday, but the actual birthday. From that moment until now, yeah? We cannot deny that we have lived through that phase of life. Right, like now, I'm 66. We can inquire, is there any reality? The past 66 years that my former mind has gone through life, lived this phase of life, is there any reality? None, is it? I can only recall through memory and all the stories that I have related to you all, or tell you all, my parents who has brought me out, who have seen me, they can only recall through memory. Even our Kayanamita shift everything. You look at it. You cannot deny that we have done a lot of cultivation, spiritual teaching, spiritual trip, sharing everything, including all the things that is recorded in the website. But is it real? Is there any reality? You look back. Everything is already dead and gone, isn't it? It only exists within that moment. Moment to moment, life passes by. Split second is dead and gone. Split second is dead and gone. And everything is already no more. We can only recall through memory. 往事只能回味. So you look at it from that aspect. Whether you exist or you don't exist, the universe continues. No different. So don't go and deludedly grasp, cling and believe that you are a hell lot of importance. You are a great thing or whatever. You are actually a speck of dust, nothing. Just a form of mind evolving. And you have been born countless and countless and countless of birth and death. Which one is you? All the segmented life, none of them are you. They are already there and gone, dead and gone. Even this one soon will be gone. So empty nature of existence is a very powerful understanding of emptiness, anatta, sunyata. So this is the concept and understanding that I will bring forward and let you develop the understanding. So hopefully with this introduction I read on, you will understand. Then I continue. But for those who understand, there is no such problem. Because basically, the Buddha's teaching on anatta as presented in the Theravada tradition also gives the same meaning for anatta as non-self and empty nature of all phenomena. And sunyata is the other word, which is equivalent to emptiness. For whatever that is impermanent, is not a permanent and changing entity that we can cling on to and say this is me, this is I, or all these are mine. That is, they cannot be owned and possessed because they are dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, no reality, not what you think. It continuously evolve, flow in a state of flux. So in the meditation, see all this clearly. Each and every phenomenon that arise, be with the moment to see its arising, sustaining and passing away. And through this, you will awaken. You will come to understand all phenomena that has this characteristics of impermanent, they behave that way. They arise and they flow in accordance with that nature's law. So everything that is dependent, originating, condition, arising, causal phenomena is not a permanent and changing entity. That's why you cannot cling, you cannot hold. There is no such thing as self. So all this, you will develop the understanding, then awaken to it. Then you can develop the wisdom to liberate your mind, free your mind from security, self-delusion. So this aspect of anatta and sunyata is very important. So I read again. For whatever that is impermanent is not a permanent unchanging entity. Get this understood. See it in the meditation that we can cling on to and say this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. That is, they cannot be owned and possessed. Ultimately, they are all mind-make. Mind-make means what? Consciousness, no reality, and empty. Because form and mind are all condition arising phenomena. Hence, he no me, he no you. Also, the Buddha always said, rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. All of form is impermanent. All of form is anatta, not a permanent and changing entity. Not necessarily non-self. Non-self only apply to living beings, like living things, or living beings, sorry. Living being means like animals, insects, fishes, mammals, including our human being. Whereas when it comes to like things that doesn't have life, like this table, is also a rupang, like the car, the furniture, the house. The Buddha said these are all form, but without life. But they are also impermanent, rupang anicchang. They are also anatta, rupang anatta. So when it comes to all these non-life thing like table, how can you say that table is non-self? That's why I say anatta doesn't mean non-self alone. Non-self is a small aspect of anatta. The real meaning of anatta is it is not a permanent, unchanging entity. And because of that, if it's a living thing or living being, it is non-self. Then because it is impermanent, it is empty, no reality, empty nature, existence. Everything coming go, arise and pass away. Everything follow nature's law, evolve, evolve. Like my teacher, Ajahn Chah, always say, only mighty nature rolling by, no reality. Whether you exist or you don't exist, no different. Nature continue to evolve. Because they are all dependent, originating, conditioned, arising, following nature's law. So when you understand nature, you understand the law that governs nature, you understand life. That is what basically Dhamma is. So the Buddhist teaching is very profound, and you need to silence your mind to meditate, to insight into all this phenomenon, to realize its characteristic, to see all this clearly and awaken to it. Then you can develop the wisdom to understand life. When you understand life, you know how to live life. Then the form and mind, even though it's impermanent, non-self, dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, but there is such thing as life. There is such thing as existence, and the form and mind can still live the good life. Then life can have meaning. Then you can experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Then life can take a turn and become meaningful, beautiful, wonderful. That's why the Heart Sutta say, when you understand true emptiness, life become wonderful. In Mandarin, they have this sentence, "Zhen Kong Miao Yu." When you have penetrated true emptiness, Zhen Kong, true emptiness, existence become wonderful, Miao Yu. So this meaning is very appropriate, beautiful. That's the reason why when you penetrate the real understanding of the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching of Lord Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, and all the other Sammasambuddha, it is so beautiful. The wisdom is so profound, so complete, that you can understand everything. And life really become beautiful. Okay, I will read on, then hopefully you can develop the understanding. Okay, the other way to understand why form is emptiness and emptiness is form is this analogy. You listen. Before something exists in space, there is only space. True or not? And space, normally we say is empty. Not the space that is within our earth where the atmosphere is there. As a science student, you will know it may appear like don't have anything, empty, but there is air, understand not? And the component of our environment is air. How many percent oxygen, how many percent nitrogen, and how many percent rare gases, they can also, through the scientific analysis, they can work it out. In my science understanding is not too bad, I think. Our atmosphere is almost 80% nitrogen, about slightly less than 20% oxygen, then about 1% rare gases. The reason why there must be 80% nitrogen is because oxygen is very, very inflammable. So without the nitrogen, our whole atmosphere will burn out very fast. So that composition is just the right combination. for our planet Earth to be so unique, to sustain life and all those things. It's like everything is like so complete and meant to be appropriate. That's why our planet is very unique. So when you understand that, then you can understand in outer space, there is no atmosphere. So technically, it's like empty space. Yeah? We call it empty space. So I will read through one more time, you will understand now. Before something exists in space, there is only space or emptiness. So form, which occupies the empty space later, does not differ from that empty space. So I will read through again. Before something exists in space, there is only space or emptiness or empty space. So form, which occupies the empty space later, does not have different characteristics with the empty space. That's why they say form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. That is the first aspect of the understanding. Yeah. So when you remove that thing, the space it occupies is actually emptiness. That's why emptiness is now taken over by the form, rupa. And the two exist together. That's why they say form is emptiness. Emptiness is form, and form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. That is the first aspect to see it. The second aspect, I will explain to you. So in form, you are able to see the... So in form, you are able to see and understand the principle of emptiness, and hence, not get attached. If we go direct into the mind, then we will know that all knowing comes from mind, because you need to perceive them, isn't it? That's why perception brings about the external form into the mind. So this aspect is very important. If we go direct into the mind, then we will know that all knowing comes from mind, as mind is a forerunner of all things. So everything is only consciousness, appearing and disappearing. So how real can it be, means that form, external form that you perceive? It may be solid out there like the block card. But how do you know it's a block card? How do you know it's a table? How do you know it's a solid form outside? You have to perceive it, isn't it? And what is perception? Just a mental image. Externally, like the block card already, not so real, where it's dependent originating condition arising. Without the parts coming together, it does not exist. When the parts are separated, it ceases to be. So externally already, condition arising, cause of phenomenon, not so real. Then how do you know that it is a block card or the external form? Through your mental perception. And what is mental perception? Just an image. How real can it be? That's why form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form does not differ from emptiness. And emptiness does not differ from form. So all this, you meditate, your silent mind, awareness nature within, you can see them, you can experience them, you can awaken to them. That's how your wisdom can become very different. It can become very profound. Then when you read all this, the Mahayana Sutta, there is no problem understanding it. That's why the first time I remember when I saw that book, my nature was full of joy. Well, I can understand that it says form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. My nature understands. There is no confusion, no doubt at all. And I realized it was so beautiful. That's why it depends on the individual's cultivation. If you cannot understand, doesn't mean it's not an authentic teaching. Not able to understand or comprehend means you lack that wisdom. You have not cultivated it. So have an open mind. Do not base on logic and shoot down something that you cannot understand. So this is for sharing. Then I read on. This is the reason why it is called empty, because it is just a mental image conjured by consciousness, which is like a great magician, as explained by the Buddha via his analogy of the five aggregates of form and mind. So the Buddha, through his essential Dhamma teaching, introduced the five aggregates of form and mind with five very beautiful analogies. The first one is a form, rupa, is like form, F-O-A-M. You know what that thing is, like the soap. If you were to stir it, it forms a lot of this foam. You call it bubble, but when there's a lot, it's like foam. So from far, you look, or initially you look, it's like very solid mass, isn't it? But after a while, what happened? It ceases to be there. So it's not really solid. So form is like that. That's why form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Then he moved on to the second aspect of the five aggregates, which is feeling, Vedana. He said feeling is like bubble. Pop, gone. Pop, gone. Its analogy is very appropriate, because feeling, if you are mindful and aware, every moment it arises and passes away. Arise and pass away. Every tactile consciousness is just a moment of consciousness. It's like that bubble, pop, gone, pop, gone. You feel, gone, feel, gone. Yeah. And it's just that moment. Even painful feeling is the same. I tried it when I was having injury or what. I silenced my mind and I developed the awareness. It's actually nothing. It's just a conscious moment in the mind. You don't attach, you don't fear, you're not deluded, nothing. It's just the way it is. And this form can go the way of nature. Whatever happened to it, there is no fear, no delusion, nothing. It's just understand the aggregate. If the life force is still there, the aggregate can still be perceived. That's it. So I repeat, form is like foam, feeling is like bubble. Then third one is what? Perception is like what? The Buddha gave the analogy of a mirage. He said like in the desert, whatever you perceive are like real, where you are looking for water, so you thought there is a pond, an oasis where you can get water, but as you go near, it's actually a mirage reflected. There was none. So perception is deceiving. Before you have wisdom, you tend to have a lot of wrong perception. There is a Pali word, if I'm not mistaken, papancha, something like that, which denote wrong perception. To have right perception, you must have wisdom, the direct seeing. Otherwise, you cannot perceive things correctly. You will always perceive things wrongly, deludedly. And what are the wrong view that people develop? When you perceive the world as a permanent place, when you perceive everything as real, permanent, right? Meaningful, can enjoy life and all those things, that is delusion. But the reality is, everything has these universal characteristics of change, impermanent. Then when you attach and cling, you suffer, it leads to suffering. Born of self-delusion, that condition, craving, grasping. You cannot crave, you cannot grasp, you cannot cling. You can have, No problem. But don't attach, don't cling, don't grasp. That is the teaching. So when you perceive the world with delusion, you will believe the body belongs to you. Then you fear that this body will get old, get sick and die. You think this is real, this is you. And you think this is your problem. Which was like Sakyamuni Buddha, before he became the Buddha, he saw the four signs, the first three signs, an old man, a sick man, and a dead man. He thought he has problem with that body. Each and every one of us, as we live life long enough, we will have to experience old age, sickness, and death. That's why he thought he needed to seek an answer to it. But later on, he realized this form and mind is not him. This one is anatta, non-self, not no-self, non-self, and also not self. That's why he awakened, he became enlightened, and he has no more problem. So old age, sickness, and death pertain to the physical form, rupa, which is not a permanent, unchanging entity that he can hold on to, cling on to, cross on to, and say, this is me, this is I. That's how he become enlightened. So simple. And yet, very few people understand. So this aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind is very beautiful. Then after that, the fourth aggregate is Sankara. Sankara is everything that your mind can do. The English equivalent word is mental activity, mental states, mental volition, and all of the other formation, like mental images, mental formation. Then there are a few more Pali words that they translate into English. But the most complete definition is Sankara is everything that your mind can do, or we call it the content of consciousness, which includes feeling and perception. That's why under Abhidhamma, they say Sankara has 52. And these 52 refer to mind states that the Buddha has defined. But if you have the understanding, you will understand it differently. That's why I dare to tell you, Sankara is everything that your mind can do, the content of consciousness. So Sankara includes your planning, your scheming, your cunningness. All these are Sankara, whatever your mind can do. The mental states of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamenting, all these are Sankara activity, Sankara mental states. So the analogy for Sankara is very beautiful. The Buddha says it's like a banana stem. If you peel it layer by layer by layer, after you peel, at the center of it, at the core of it, what is left? Nothing. Have you all peeled before? I was so lucky, maybe because of my past. When I was in primary school, my school teacher got one art class. He asked us to go and cut this banana stem. Of course, they got big one and small one. Then you come to the class, there's an art paper. Then they got this stamping pad with all the different color. And then you stamp the color, then you chop it onto your drawing paper. Oh, it come out the pattern very nice. Then at that time, very strange, I was just standard 4, 10 years old. I just go and peel out the thing. When I was young that time, everybody keep that thing. I peel it out. We had a lesson over, I submitted my art already. Then I peel. Then I realized, at the core of it, at the center of it, there is nothing. Then I feel funny, why I do that? Then I knew it's a message for me. Until later on, when I study the Buddha's teaching, when I saw this analogy, I straight away understood. Because Sankara means your mental activity, your thinking. That's The reason why finally, before you become enlightened, you will understand this. All of your thinking, no meaning on. You will come to realize, think also like that, don't think also like that. No difference. It's not going to make any difference. Even the next moment you may die, you will not go and worry like, I haven't planned my life. I haven't done this. I haven't done that. I haven't do up my will. I haven't planned for my children inheritance. You won't go and think of all those things. There's no reality. This moment, the breath can stop, finish, gone. No problem. So what? Do you think it's very real? Do you think all these are real? Do you think there's a relative? There's children, there's wife? In the ultimate sense of the unconditioned, the mind, true emptiness, all this doesn't exist. But because of condition, because of karma, because of affinity, all this manifests. And the conditioned world has its own story. Do you understand? But in reality, he know you, he know me. That's why there is no mark of a self cultivating, no mark of others, no mark of life, no mark of dhamma, society, everything. When you can penetrate the teaching until you can see the empty nature of existence, you can never understand all this. Then I realized all of sankhara, like the Buddha say, is empty. No reality. At the core of it, there is no reality at all. No matter what you do through your thinking, you can be sorrowful or jump for joy or whatever. Ultimately, it's empty. That's why sankhara anicchang, sankhara dukkhang, sankhara anatta. Very clear. So this fourth analogy is very beautiful. And the fifth analogy is the best. When the Buddha said, the aggregate of vijnana, consciousness, is like a great magician. And you know magician, right? Create magic. Or they call it the illusionist, that create illusion for you, like real, but actually it's a magic. Yeah. So all of consciousness is actually like a magic, yeah. Like an illusion. That's why it's called the illusionary world. Hmm. The condition arising world is a phenomenal world of consciousness, and the phenomenal world of consciousness is an illusionary world. But it is full of illusion, no reality. How real can it be? It's just consciousness, vijnana. It creates illusion to deceive you. That's why the magician is called an illusionist, expert in creating illusion, really. Appear real, look real, like real. But with delusion, wrong view, you will attach, you will cling. And it can make you miserable, suffer, afflict you, torment you. But when you have the wisdom and the understanding, when you have awakened, all this has no power over you. That's how beautiful the teaching is. Okay? So with this, we complete part two. Now we move on to part three. Part 3 is meditation. This one also very interesting. You listen. The three universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state and non-self or empty nature of existence. Anicchang, Dukkang, Anatta, the equivalent Pali word. Anicchang is impermanent. Dukkang is suffering, the suffering state. Then Anatta is non-self, an empty nature of existence. All phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit these three universal characteristics of nature. It's called a universal characteristic, means common to all. Okay? And these three universal characteristics are impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature, means anatta, anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. Take for example, our in and out breath, our footstep, our heartbeat, our feeling, our perception, our thought process and consciousness, and our bodily vibration, etc. All this is within our own form and mind, right? Our own physical body and consciousness that is trapped inside. And you can be aware of all this, right? True or not? Huh? If you cannot be aware, it means you are not a cultivator, you are not a meditator. That's why I saw all this. Then I realized they are all in a continuous state of flux, continuously arising and passing away following nature's law. Because of the life force, the pulse of life, the heartbeat that trigger off the pulse of life. That's why we have our pulse of vibration. Then we have our breath, the in and out breath. Then our footstep, our heartbeat, our feeling, our perception, our activity of mind, thought process and consciousness. So everything is in a state of flux. They are continuously arising and passing away following nature's law. So they are appearing and disappearing characteristic. The birth and the death, like your walking footstep. When you arise, the footstep is like it's born. Then when you step down, it's like take birth and death. The coming and the going, the arising and the passing away. So you will see all this. And these are signs of impermanence, sign of anicca. So when you are in the meditative state, fully aware and mindful, you can see them. But you must see them at the moment of its arising, sustaining and passing away there and then without thought. Then you will awaken to it. Then you realize all phenomena is exhibiting its characteristic everywhere in the midst of life and nature. And everything is like that. That's why you will come to a very penetrative understanding of these three universal characteristics. You will awaken to it. It will transform you. Then you will not hold, you will not cling, because everything is not what you think. Ultimately, it's empty, non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. It's just mighty nature rolling by, the coming and the going, the appearing and the disappearing, the birth and death, the rise and fall. And the moment of its arising is sustaining and is disappearing. You must see them clearly. We are the silent mind in direct seeing to awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So as to break free from sakkayadity or self-delusion, see clearly its condition arising phenomenon. That is how condition arise. That's our ability to see the condition behind their arising. Ability to see sign within nature is dhamma. If you don't have that ability, it means your cultivation is still very superficial. When your cultivation has developed, has evolved and become more and more, has become more and more strong, means you have really progressed. Then you will start to see all this, understand all this. Because ability to see condition, to see the sign before things happen, you need a very sensitive mind that has the clarity, the mindfulness. You need the nature which is completely quiet, silent, that can sense. That's why you will develop sensitivity of mind. And to be sensitive, you must have wisdom. You must have sati. You must be with that nature in awareness. Otherwise, you cannot be sensitive. So all this is part of cultivation, dhamma. Okay, I read on. See clearly the condition arising phenomenon. That is how when condition arises, the phenomenon comes to be. And how when the supporting condition for its sustainment are still there, then the phenomenon will continue to exist. And how when any of the supporting conditions cease to be, then it will lead to the disappearance or cessation of that phenomenon. This will lead to the comprehension of its universal characteristics of impermanence. Once you can see and understand impermanence, you will also understand non-self and empty nature clearly. Here they are interconnected. When you realize the universal characteristics of anicchang or impermanence, you will understand that it is non-self. And because it is non-self and it is impermanent, everything is not real. Empty nature existence. Everything come and go. Consciousness come and go. Sankara come and go. The mind aggregate comes and go. And all mundane mind is a foreigner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So how real can life be? Mind make a day. Phenomenal world of consciousness. Empty, no reality. Dependent originating condition arising cause. All this you will awaken to. You will penetrate, you will realize. That is the power of Buddhist meditation. That is the power of the Buddha's teaching. It's so beautiful. So all this, you can develop the understanding of it. I rejoice and I will start to you. So move it up. Move it up. Okay, I read. This will lead to the comprehension of its impermanent and non-self or empty nature clearly. Then you will come to understand that if you try to hold or cling onto things and want them your way, which is not nature's way, suffering will come to be. You will understand straight away. Will everything follow nature's law? So if you cannot accord and flow, if you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you will suffer. You will be afflicted. That is what Dhamma is. So when you have mindfulness to observe, to see, to clearly awaken to all of the Pancha Niyamas that governs life and existence, then you realize only mighty nature ruling by, no reality. Everything is just dependent originating condition arising cause of phenomena. Now what you think? And this law you cannot violate, you cannot break. Even the form and mind is subject to the law of karma. Your mundane mind is subject to the law of mind. That's why you have karma niyama, chitta niyama. And you have to understand all the essential dhamma or nature's truth within the conditioned world. That's why within the conditioned world we have Four Noble Truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching. We have dhamma. But in the Heart Sutta, when you have penetrated through emptiness, in true emptiness, there is no Four Noble Truth. He no you, he no me. No one born, no one old, no one sick, no one die. So it's the complete opposite because that is the unconditioned. This is the condition. So you have to realize the wisdom of both aspects of the conditioned world and the unconditioned. In order to understand life, to transcend the duality within the condition. So duality only exists in the conditioned world. Dhamma only exists within the conditioned world. Law of karma only applies within the conditioned world. So understand all this. Then do not be deluded by what you read and what you learn. Because a lot of people who don't understand, they thought the Buddha contradicted himself. And the most common one, which a lot of people don't seem to question or find out, is they say the Buddha teach anatta, non-self. Then under the five daily contemplation, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of karma. See? Appear like very contradictory. No, there is no contradiction. Because this one pertains to the conditioned world. The fifth contemplation is to let you understand that the form and mind is not you. This form and mind, which is anicchang dukkang anatta, is subject to the law of karma. That is the meaning. So when he say you, it refer to the five aggregate of form and mind. And that one exists. But it's not a permanent and changing entity. It's not you. It's not self. Understand that. That one is form and mind. This segmented line. The vehicle and tool for you to come to this existential world. To live life, to experience life, to pay back karma, to do your vow, to fulfill your vows and mission. Then also to cultivate, to develop whatever you want to develop, to experience whatever you want to experience if you have the understanding and the wisdom. So all these are the understanding that you need to have for you to have the complete wisdom to live life, to understand life, then only can you have the good life, the noble life, the life of an enlightened being. Then only life can become beautiful, meaningful, and wonderful. So this is what the teaching is all about. Huh? Okay, I will read on. Huh? This is how you react to your sense perception via delusion that conditions your evil roots to arise. Evil roots are the roots of all evil. Hence, they have the power to condition you into negativity via your evil action, evil speech, and evil thought process. This is the reason why heedfulness is this is the reason why heedfulness to understand all this, all of this is very important. And with heedfulness, you will be able to constantly investigate the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha to confirm that they are the truth, hence re-establishing your faith and reaffirming your right view. The Buddha Puja or Buddhist devotional practice as taught by the Buddha are very useful practices. Recommended by the Buddha to help us develop the five spiritual faculties of Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya needed for us to receive and understand his spiritual teaching more easily. So silence your mind to do the Buddha Puja with your strong faith and confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. We are understanding who he is and how special and great a being he is, then bow mindfully. This will develop the very strong, calm, and composed mind, leading to the establishment of virya and sati. Then with the strong sadha and virya, you bow mindfully to pay respect and reverential salutation to Lord Buddha, to decondition the heedless thinking that you have arisen throughout the day, thereby calming the mind down to develop the stable sati or mindfulness within. That's why puja is a good way to decondition your heedless thinking and to develop the sadha, the composed mind, the energy, the spiritual tenacity to cultivate. Yeah. And when you develop mindfulness, your mind transforms. It becomes heedful, aware, without thought, without duality, without hindrance. That's how you progress. So through cultivating puja, which must be included in your daily routine before you sleep and when you wake up, and in between, you can do that. It will help you. That is very useful. So the puja, which will include the respect, the bowing, the salutation, and the meditation. Then all of the 10 meritorious actions, you will get to perform them. Listening to Dhamma, straightening your view, share merit, transfer merit. Then provide service, be of help to others, be a blessing to all. So all these are important understanding that were develop progress in the cultivation. Then I will read on. reason being, oh sorry, I read the one sentence before that. Huh? This will develop a very strong, calm and composed mind, leading to the establishment of virya and sati. Then with the strong sadha and virya, you bow mindfully to pay respect or reverential salutation to Lord Buddha to decondition your heedless thinking that you have arisen throughout the day, thereby calming the mind to develop the stability of sati or mindfulness within. The reason being, this constant bowing and chanting of the Buddha's name as practiced by the Mahayana tradition can also help develop a very strong sadha, virya, and sati needed to develop the wisdom. There are also many benefits that can arise because the bowing or reverential salutation is also a meritorious action. So when you bow, pay respect is a meritorious action. Then apart from developing the faith, we can also make use of the merits to make the necessary aspiration to walk the path of Dhamma smoothly by avoiding the fools and only meet up with the wise and the enlightened one so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. When we bow mindfully with a very strong sadha of faith and virya, our mind is very calm and very composed, thereby helping us to develop a very stable mindfulness or sati much more easily. And it also leads us to cultivate humility. And at the same time, we get to exercise our body. Sati is awareness before the knowing or the arising of thought, just a pure awareness within. So this bowing should be done with understanding that is, when we bow, we must bow it with the silent mind, means body and mind move as one in perfect harmony and synchrony. So this bowing, if you can develop it well, it will help you. Eh? So I read again, eh? Sati is awareness before the knowing or the arising of the thought. So just relax and maintain awareness. Eh? So just appear awareness within. Then you are already naturally aware. Don't try to be aware. Well, the trying is by the thought. So this bowing should be done with understanding. That is, we bow to establish mindfulness or awareness without thought, so that the body and mind move as one in perfect synchrony and harmony. So when you bow, don't try to know. Just do it. Body and mind as one without words. Silent. You can do it. And if you can stabilize, you will suddenly realize what sati is. Because when you are in that state of mindfulness, the body and mind move as one without thought. Then you can see that movement, that flow. It's like that body and the awareness move as one. Then you realize, hey, sati is not what people think. Sati is just aware, no word. Nothing, no concept, no thinking, just that movement. The awareness within is with the phenomena. That's a specific phenomenal awareness. Maybe bowing, walking, standing, turning, stretching, or looking forward. Everything can be in sati. So all this understanding is very beautiful. So that the body and mind move as one in perfect synchrony and harmony. Once mindfulness has been established, means mind has entered sati, use it to cultivate the four postures of standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. Then followed by the cultivation of sati sampajana, or mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement in the present moment to develop the initial wisdom. Born of the direct seeing of the three universal characteristics. Only then can we proceed with the contemplation of the four elements and the 32 parts within the physical body of ours and the nine stages of cemetery decomposition contemplation to finish off the kaya anupassana cultivation. After Kaya Nupassana, we then proceed to Vedana Nupassana and Chitta Nupassana, followed by finally Dhamma Nupassana. Yeah. Ah, good. With that, we end. Eh? Oh, it's still early. Eh? So, before 10, eh? We can still spend another 15 minutes. Okay, we will continue with lesson 22, Sutta 1.1, the meditative mind. So this one is a recap. The meditative mind must not only be calm, but it must also be mindful. Remember, if it's calmness alone, it's not the meditative mind. The meditative mind must also be mindful and heedful within to develop the wisdom needed to liberate the mind. It is this meditative mind, means the silent mind that is just aware or mindful and heedful, that can understand how the mind stir and become afflicted via one's self-delusion and wrong view or ignorance that condition the evil roots to arise. You will see all this, that's why you can understand. It will come to understand its origination factor clearly, how you stir, how you become angry, fearful, emotional, you know, etc. As to how the evil roots come to be, it will also come to understand that before the evil roots are there, the mind was originally very peaceful. Everything arises naturally. We are conditioned arising causes. And all phenomena exhibit the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Then via dhammanupassana, cultivation of the six internal and six external sense bases, one will understand clearly how to trace the origination factor behind the stirring of the mind and how one can retrospectively reverse it via wisdom, via straightening of one's view. The moment your mind stirs, Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course, hence conditioning one's suffering like the wheel that follows the hoof of the cart. The meditative mind will understand how the mundane mind got caught. If understanding, it will no longer be deluded. That's the reason why meditation is about the silent mind observing, attentively aware. That's it. No need to do anything. Don't try to know. Through all this awareness, it will awaken, it will understand, but it see clearly. Not according to theory, knowledge that people tell you or you read out from the book. That one is not going to help you. You must have this meditative mind, the silent mind, to observe and to see clearly what happened in life, in existence. Without word, without thought, without knowledge, without concept, just aware. When you are just aware, you will understand. Because you become sensitive, you have clarity. Then when you read the teaching, it becomes so clear to you because you saw it in your meditation, in your mind state. So that teaching is very beautiful when you understand that. The mind stir and become afflicted via one's delusion. Oh, that one I have covered. Huh? Okay, then this paragraph. Huh? The meditative mind will understand how the mundane mind get caught. This you will see very clearly. With understanding, it will no longer be deluded. To really see and awaken to this truth or understanding, one needs a very stable mindfulness. That's the reason why I've been emphasizing. Not until your daily mindfulness has stabilized, your mind has entered sati, the real meditation has not arisen yet. So you have to do that. Take for example, a case where a Kayanamitta's friend passed away suddenly at the age of 63. Due to heart attack. The Kayanamitta said, "Today I am very sad. So I asked her why. She said because she had been my very good friend for the past 20 plus years. I asked her again, do you know why you are so sad? And who is sad? And who is the you that is sad? If you inquire into it, you will awaken. I remember this lady. I think it's Joyce. Joyce Lim. As usual, she said, attachment law. Then I said, most Buddhists answer this way. And because of that, very likely, they will not develop the wisdom. But they never inquire, reflect, and contemplate deep into the Dhamma. That has arisen as advised by the Buddha under the second turning of the first noble truth. The first turning is proclamation of the first noble truth of dukkha leading to Suttamayapanya. Then under the second turning, the Buddha say, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood leading to Cittamayapanya. So the inquiry will enable her to investigate via mindfulness and heedfulness to realize that it is the mind that has been conditioned by her wrong view or ignorance that causes her to cling onto her thought that arises via her memory of her good friend of 20 years. Hence, confirming the Buddha's final summary of the first noble truth that states, in short, it is ignorance of self-delusion that condition one's grasping to the five aggregates of form and mind that I call dukkha. So the cause of suffering, which is craving or grasping and clinging, conditioned by her own self-delusion or sociality, lead her to cling onto her mental perception, memories, and consciousness that condition her pure feeling into sadness and suffering. So you look at the five aggregate. She attached to what she perceived. She attached to the sankhara memory and the consciousness that she come to perceive. So all this condition her pure feeling into sadness or emotional suffering state. The reality is, it is only a form of mind, not so real. Because all conditioned arising phenomena are not a permanent and changing entity that one can cling on to and say, this is me, this is I, and these are mine. Do reflect deep into this and awaken to its three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, and anatta to break free. Then we will understand that there is no one to be sad. And also no one born, no one sick, and no one die. Contemplate and reflect deeply and inquire, why am I still so deluded? Why can't I wake up to this truth, to this reality? So this is where I realize very few cultivators can have this understanding. Because to them it's so real. My good friend, my close friend of 20 years, then the memory of all those relationships and all those things, and the amount of meaning you give to that relationship. Then later on, I remember the friend that passed away has a son. And I think Joyce managed to develop the understanding. Then share with me, we discuss quite a bit, then I help her to develop this. Then she managed to turn the son around and brought him to my class. And he attended for quite a while. And the son got his own coming, a lot of problems. But finally he learned. And he actually told me personally that he has reduced his suffering and misery, and he has become a more evolved person. And he also came and helped us for quite a while. Remember, I forgot his name, a tall guy, a young tall guy. So the Dhamma is really beautiful. You can actually help you understand the noble truth, especially the first noble truth clearly. Then you can reflect, you can contemplate, and you can develop the wisdom to awaken. But human beings' problem is because their mind is so conditioned. The mundane mind always think in the sense of a mundane person based on conditioned world perception of things. So to them, they always say, "But Brother Theo, this one is my friend, really, we are very close. And 63 years old, how can he suddenly die like that?" But the question is, people who are very young also die. Some at birth die. It's not the age. Young people, 20-something, 30-something also die. COVID-19, you can see. Not only old people. Then heart attack, stroke. Sometimes healthy people, intelligent people, but they overwork, they stress themselves out, not enough rest. Death can happen. Yeah. But when it comes to Dhamma, you must have the ultimate understanding of the unconditioned to free, otherwise you cannot free. That's why you must reflect, contemplate. And like just now, the question I asked is very good. Eh? Do you know why you are so sad? And who is sad? Who is the you that is sad? So if you go and reflect and inquire, then you realize this fellow is just a form of mind. He know you, he know me. It's not me, it's a vehicle and a tool for me to come to this world. So I make use of it to live life, to experience life, and to do what it can do to actually develop the wholesomeness, the merits, and be a blessing to all. Instead of thinking the wrong thought and getting the form and mind entangled and become miserable and sad, that is delusion. So reflect, contemplate. Who is sad? Who is the one that is sad? So all this, you have to reflect. Then finally, the question is, who are you? What are you? What is this five aggregate of form and mind? That's why this teaching is very beautiful, very penetrative when you understand. But when you don't understand, it can be very, very difficult. Because the mundane mind cling and attach to mundane reality. That's why you will have wrong view. Sakaya Diti, that everything is so real to you. You become emotional. You become sad, sorrowful. You lament. Then the thought through memory keep on reminding you. He is your good friend. He's so young. How can he just pass away and die like that? Then the thought will continue to create story and project. Then you cannot come to term with it. Then you become afflicted. No different from somebody who doesn't cultivate the Dhamma. If you are a Dhamma practitioner, cultivator, when you are confronted with this reality and you don't know how to do the appropriate reflection, contemplation, and understanding to come out of it, it means you have not really cultivated. You have maybe developed a lot of knowledge. A lot of Dhamma knowledge, but you have not really developed the wisdom, the understanding, the cultivation. That's the reason why many so-called Buddhists in inverted comma, they are still trapped. They can't really come out of it. So this is a good example of what the Dhamma can really do to help. When you really confront the first noble truth reality in life, certain of this reality can be very traumatic, but no problem. When you have the wisdom and the understanding, you have no problem. There is still someone that didn't finish it.
Part two.
No, just now, that part one. Did I read this last sentence? Oh, I read it. Okay, so I read again. Huh? Then we will understand that there is no one to be sad, and also no one born, no one die. Contemplate and reflect deeply and inquire, why am I still so deluded? Why can't I wake up to this truth, to this understanding of the teaching? Anicchang dukkhang anatta, non-self, he know you, he know me. My aggregate of form and mind is empty. Now what you think? That's how I reflect, contemplate until very, very clear. It's just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditioned out for me to come to this world, to live life, to experience life, to fulfill my vows, to experience the karmic process, to develop the understanding of life, to cultivate, etc. So use it. Do not be deluded by it. Then all of your understanding will start to unfold. Then you will know how to bring yourself back to the understanding, that nature within, through that wisdom that is connected. And this wisdom is the one that free your mind, remove you from all the entanglement via self-delusion, wrong view, and ignorance. So when you have all this understanding, your mind becomes beautiful, you will liberate. Okay, I think we end, huh? Because 10:15 already. Okay, so at least today we covered quite a lot. Huh? So we are at part 2, lesson 22. Okay, we will now open up for Q&A, question and answer. Also meditation reporting. I think today's topic is very interesting. Huh? Maybe you all can share some of your life experiences, how you all encounter the first noble truth reality and come out of it. Huh? Or how you do it, you can share so that more people can learn. And if there's any advice that you need from me, I will share with you. I will explain it in more detail. We hear you loud and clear. So you have anything to report or share or any question?
Before that, I would like to say is today's sharing is very good.
Oh, sadhu. Very good. Yeah. Huh? Very extraordinarily clear and beautiful. Huh?
Question. Actually, the question I recall is not really related to today's sharing. It's just like that day. Like Brother Teo say something about like you know when we have. When we have a dream and then it's like whatever happened to us during the day, if you are not aware, then that's why we end up with a dreaming of it and then maybe have nightmare, anything like that, right?
Nightmare and all those things.
Then somehow I didn't know, but I was thinking, and why? Actually, I didn't notice that I was contemplating on this, you know. Then one day when I was sitting, then I noticed that, oh, because when I was sitting, even if that whatever thing that arise during my daily activities then...
You can
then,
see it, isn't it?
Yes, I can see it, but there's another thought like wanted to stop it, you know. But during that time, it will let it flow, so it's easy to clear it out. So that's why Brother Teo is saying this.
Because most human beings who are not mindful, they are actually in a dream state, even in the conscious moment when they are going through life. That's why sometimes people can see you, like you are not yourself. You are daydreaming. You are like lost in your fantasy and all those things. Then sometimes it's, you're so, people are so like heedless. They allow the thought to move. You know? Then because you are a cultivator, you have more moment of mindfulness. That's why your situation is, you listener, tell me this will help you. You always have this thought that come and tell you, you shouldn't be doing this. You should be doing something else. Understand? So that one is actually quite useful. It's like Yoniso Manasikara come and prompt you. But then the Dhamma doesn't come out, understand? It only tell you, you shouldn't be daydreaming, you should be mindful, you should be aware. But you must reflect, contemplate, and develop the daily mindfulness until so stable, until you have deeper insight and deeper penetrative understanding. Then when you have that, the thing that come out and prompt you, which is your initial wisdom, we call it Yoniso Manasikara, it will tell you the Dhamma. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkang. Then straight away you become heedful, aware. You won't think anymore. You must have that ability. Otherwise, this state will continue. Like you now come to know, you live a life of this orderly person because you are not able to have the stability or daily mindfulness to be mindful, to be aware. So most of the time is the heedless mundane mind doing all the things without much awareness within. So we call this heedless thinking, and the mundane mind react to sense experience. Then you accumulate. Then these are the things that need to be released. Because the brain, when it is asleep, it needs to find order. So the order comes when you go to sleep. Then it has to have this subconscious release. That's why sometimes you have dream, you have nightmare, and all that. To release all this trapped fear, insecurity, craving, desire, the light and this one. A lot of these, they are trapped in the memory. So learn to develop more penetrative wisdom and understanding. Then next time when it arises, it will prompt you. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkang, dhamma anatta. Then, like, Engbi, go through the unique code. The unique code can help you. Only mighty nature rolling by, no reality, not he know you, he know me, form and mind, fire angrier, form and mind, segmented life, karmically conditioned out. So I use it. So you have to reflect, contemplate until you become very clear about what this form and mind is. And then you won't fall into the trap of delusion like normal human being, like normal Buddhajana that don't have the understanding. Because the Dhamma is supposed to wake you up so that you don't become heedless and sleep anymore. That's why I say wake up to this truth, to this reality. Don't be deluded anymore. So today's sharing, very good. Go back, listen again. Go through it again. And follow it with the heart sutta book. Then it become very clear. Then contemplate, reflect, stabilize it. Then this understanding become very powerful. Later on, when you have the understanding, there is a lot of joy. Like last time, what Song, Alicia, they all, even in video, they have gone through. Then they realize the teaching is so beautiful. That's why they write it down. Then they reflect, contemplate, they develop the understanding. Then they train their mind, they silence their mind. The only thing that most people still need to work on is the daily mindfulness, the stability with it, together with the daily religious routine. If you have that, you are in the meditative state most of the time, if not all the time. Then you all will progress and you all will transform, awaken very fast. Now, the Kayamita force, the consciousness is very strong and this is possible now. Okay, tell me.
Yeah. I also would like to say that last week when Man Yuan shared, and then I think it's something about selfish thoughts.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I after contemplating for a few days, then it's like really true, you know. It's like every
you
day
feel that part, the selfish thinking.
Yeah, sitting is like always thinking of okay, well, how can I do better? How can I do this?
Yeah, yeah.
So
the ego is still involved. Mm.
Yeah, it is very true. And then when you really relax, actually it's just breathing, and then the body will do whatever.
Yes, awareness. There is no egoic mind there saying this and that, trying to do this and that. These are all the egoic mind through your conditioning. That's why now you start to understand. If you are not relaxed and just aware, don't try to know, don't try to do anything, then you cannot meditate, because the mundane mind is actively trying to do. How can I become better? How can I improve? All the ego is there. The I. I am still not there. I'm still not good. All this is the ego. That's why the real meditation is relax, aware, silent. Then realize the true mind. Stabilize the sati. Realize your true awareness within. That's awareness nature, which is not a being, not a mind, which is just a nature. It's not a being. It's not a mundane mind. It cannot come out and live life. It don't have words, don't have duality, don't have ego, nothing. It's just the pure awareness that can awaken, that can insight into phenomena, that can understand things. That's it, finish. Apart from that, there is nothing. Then when you understand, that one becomes wisdom, connected to the form and mind. That's how it functions. So the form and mind with the wisdom connected means this form and mind no longer deluded. It can never be deceived. That's why you must have wisdom, only wisdom free. You must reflect, contemplate, inquire. Then through the third turning, silence your mind, insight into phenomena, awaken through the direct seeing. Then observe, develop understanding, straighten your view, change. That is what cultivation is all about. Not all the theory. As I able to see all this egoic mind, the movement of thought, the emotion, how it stirs you into sakyadity, how it arises the evil. See them. Trace the origination factor, how the fear, the emotion, the anger, the jealousy, the envy, how they arise. Then how one becomes heedless. Why they cannot be heedful? Because they lack spiritual faculty. They lack Dhamma understanding. So all this, the moment you understand, you determine and strive on with heedfulness to train yourself, you transform, you become beautiful. Sadhu, very good. Tell me.
Sadhu.
Thank you. Thank you for the good sharing. Oh, not bad. We still got 5 more minutes. Anybody else? Anybody else?
Radio.
Ah, Manjun, yes. Yeah.
Radio, I want to share my meditation a few Sundays ago.
Ah, okay. Sadhu.
The day when I was meditating, my father, as I meditate, I heard my father coming down from upstairs.
Okay.
So it was tea time. So I know he was going to look for food. I heard his footstep, and I was aware that he went into the kitchen. And he lifted up the wok for food. I have this thought, you know. I was wondering whether he would know that there is food on the dining table. The soup is on the dining table. But the mee hoon is in the wok. And I have having this feeling of wanting him to. Do you know there is soup on the table? Because I don't want him to only look for the mee hoon in the wok.
Yeah.
Then suddenly, I think I was thinking, why I want to bother about this? Let him be.
Yeah.
He's already an 80-year-old man, and he will know how to settle all this himself.
Hmm.
I mean, I was brought up by him, why I worry? And then I kind of like calm down, and I could feel the difference when I was having those thoughts about whether my father would know where to look.
Very good, very good.
And after that, I stopped having worry about whether he know where to find the food.
Become peaceful.
It was like the mind was clear.
I
can see. He settled down. And then I realized that a lot of things in our life, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily it is a big problem that can make us not happy or angry. It can be little things like that that we are not aware of.
Very good.
And it will affect us.
Yes.
And if we hold on to it, it will really get unhappy because I was thinking.
It will proliferate. It will
father
kind of
don't want to go to the dining table and look for the soup.
All these are what? Your fear, your worry, your concern, your so-called love. Actually, it's all mundane mind, egoic mind deceiving you. Understand? So now I will explain to you. So when you are meditating, means you are aware. That's why you can be aware of your father coming down all the way. So next time, just maintain awareness. Way finish, but first time you go through this, which is good, so that you report and you can learn and others can learn. The awareness can actually be the guiding meditative training. If you maintain awareness, you can become very sensitive, you can know many things. But after you know, you allow your mundane mind to continue and create heedless thinking. Then you realize the fear, the worry, the concern, the so-called love in inverted comma will come in and interfere. That's why your thought will project and say whether your father know or not there is bihun in the wok, so that he don't only go for the soup on the table and all that. So all this make you like unsettled, understand? You become like the mundane mind is not peaceful, doesn't have order. So luckily you know how to reflect, contemplate. What am I doing? Why am I worrying about this? I supposed to meditate. And that's how meditate means what? To have clarity, to be at peace. Then your auto suggestion, which is good. Your father already 80 years old. He brought you up. He is your dad. He should have the experience to know all this. Whether he can find it or he cannot find it, not a problem. You just relax, maintain awareness, and continue with your meditation. Then if you really want to be a filial piety daughter, what you can do is you maintain awareness and find out whether finally he can locate all those food or not. Otherwise, you can make a decision to come out of the meditation, then go out and help him. That is an option too. But more important is when you meditate, you must always remember your sole purpose is to meditate, not to get your mind entangled with all those things again. Then what you realize is very good. A lot of small things in life can make you think like that. Not only in the meditative state, well, in the meditative state when you describe, at least you are more aware, you can see. But when you are in the conscious state, a lot of this thinking going on, which is quite similar in pattern, you cannot see. You are not aware because you don't have stability of mindfulness. That's why stability of mindfulness is very important. The moment your mind starts to proliferate or lost in thought, creating the heedless thinking, you are aware. Not only you are aware by asking, what am I doing? Because this is heedlessness. There's a heedfulness is to be aware within. The moment you are heedless means you are no longer aware. And this is meditation. That's why the Buddha said, heedful, ever mindful, constantly meditating. Ever mindful means what? Every time away from inside. That's how it transforms us from a heedless way of living to a heedful way of living. And that process takes a while. Like what you understand is the beginning. Then when you stabilize your daily mindfulness, you will see how all this can be done. Then not only in the meditation you won't do it, even in your conscious daily life, you will not do it because you are sensitive, you are mindful. That's the reason why mindfulness is very different. Not what people think. People can talk with knowledge about mindfulness, but they don't know what sati is. And if they have not done it, they can never understand all this. How to explain all this to people? That's the reason why I want you all to share your reporting, share your experience. Then I can fill in the gap for you so that you can understand better and you can progress. Like today, Tammy sharing. He learned from your sharing earlier on too. Then now, you share some more, your experience become a deeper experience for other people to learn. And these are very useful, very important aspect of cultivation, which people can never develop the understanding unless they are in the various stages of progress. Like you are at this stage, Tammy is at that stage. So when you share, I can actually can check and reflect whether they have gone through that stage or not. If not, then they develop clarity of mind to become more aware so that they can also progress. Very good. Sadhu, Manyan. Thank you. Okay, I think we should stop. 10:35 already. Also, Tammy, thank you so much. Sadhu. So we all rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.